Welcome to The Craft of Preaching, an online conference hosted by Luther Seminary, October 5th through 7th, 2020. This workshop by Michael Bender is entitled Preaching to a Politically Purple Congregation.
Appreciate being with you all. Hope you're having a good day, enjoying the conference so far. I'm going to start out by just giving you a very brief intro and then also ask you a question. And then we're going to have maybe like 25 minutes or 30 minutes of conversation or just some data and learning that I want to share with you. Then we'll give you a chance to talk with each other in some small groups and bring some Q&A towards the end of the time. So as Don said, I'm the visiting professor of Congregational Mission and Leadership at Luther. I've been around Luther for about 10 years as a PhD student and as a professor. I also get to work on some innovation team projects at Luther Seminary. I helped start a church called Mill City Church in 2008 in Minneapolis and still serve as teaching pastor in that congregation. And so a lot of what I'm going to share with you today comes from my experience of preaching there over the last 12 years. My question for you all to consider as we get going is, what's one challenge that you are facing as you try to preach to a politically diverse audience? So I'm assuming that some of you at least are communicating on a regular basis, knowing that the people listening to you don't share every political opinion in common, right? And so as you're thinking about how you're going to preach or even what you're going to preach on or what you're going to emphasize, you may have those folks in mind and wonder, how do I actually go about helping to preach effectively to this sort of an audience? And so consider that question as we talk together this morning and then maybe as you get into your small groups. So I want to start with a story of the 2016 election. So as many of you know, the 2016 election was a tense one. And we were thinking at Mill City Church about what do we want to do? What do we want to preach on? How do we want to help our community process whatever the result of the 2016 election is going to be? And what we landed on at that time was to structure our worship service as a lament. So I don't know if you've ever done this before, but to actually take your order of worship and structure it the way kind of an average lament in the book of Psalms might show up, where you have an address of God and you involve confession and complaining to God and all the different steps. And the reason we did that was because we knew that tensions were riding very high in our congregation, that people were disagreeing about what they ought to do in terms of voting that year. We had had some intense conversations, tried to have some holy conversations in our congregation. Particularly, there were some people on Facebook who were just being outright nasty to each other. I don't know if we're probably unique in that. I'm sure that never happens in any of your congregations. But we had some people who were, you know, they were just being mean, you know, posting things back and forth and kind of yelling at each other virtually. And so we thought, you know, we communicated this very clearly to the congregation that we're not biased towards a candidate, but whatever happens, we think we need some space to lament what's gone on prior to the election and to try to heal as a church family. And so we planned this lament after the election. And one of the most powerful images that that I remember over the last 10 years even were two guys who had been particularly in conflict on Facebook and other social media platforms over the course of the election period. And the gentleman who was more conservative went up to take communion. And in our setting, you kind of walk back to your chair and there's a space to receive prayer or to stop and pray for a while. And this guy goes up, takes communion, comes back to the back of the space and is kind of waiting there. And the other gentleman, who's a more liberal-leaning person, is coming back out of taking communion just weeping, like just crying. And the first gentleman just waits for him and like sort of stops him in the back of this worship space that we meet in and asks him if he can give him a hug. and asks for his forgiveness. And at least for this one brief moment, there was like Christian unity winning out over political disagreement around the Lord's table. And that picture of those people reconciling, and then in the next year, actually going on to help start a new mission, start a new church together on the same team, which was pretty awesome, gives an image in my mind of what we hope unity looks like in our congregations, even though we know we're not going to agree all the time on whatever political disagreements we might have. And so what does it look like to try to preach knowing that people have disagreements in your congregation politically? I'm going to give you a handful of very practical things that I think we've learned at Mill City and others have shared with us over the last few years. I hope that they're helpful to you. So I'm going to start by sharing this presentation with you, which I'll make available to anybody who's interested in it after this. Can somebody give me a thumbs up if you can see that okay? Okay, great. So I wanted to just briefly start with this text, Luke chapter 20, from 22 to 25. There's this conversation that I'm sure many of you are familiar with where Jesus is being asked whether or not his followers or anybody should pay taxes to Caesar. Right. And it's the scripture tells us that it's a trap for Jesus, that they're trying to pin him down to see, is he for Caesar? Is he against Caesar? So they can use that against him. And I don't know how you all feel when you're preaching, but sometimes this is what preaching to a politically purple congregation feels like to me, is that everyone's trying to kind of trap you in some ways into one particular perspective or another, so they can box you in. And Jesus' response, as you know, is brilliant. And he looks at the coin and he says, well, whose is this? Whose image is this? This is Caesar's. Give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. Now, I've heard some people interpret this story as if church life, spiritual life, Christian life is just completely separate from the political world and the political identity. And I actually don't think that's what Jesus is up to here. I think he's recognizing a binary trap when he sees one and avoiding the way the question is framed to him in order to reframe the conversation in terms of placing God and relationship with God as a priority out of which everything else kind of comes from, or everything else flows from this idea that if you give to God what is God's, then all your other actions and all your other opinions should be shaped by that priority. And so what I want to start with in suggesting on how to get to preaching to a politically purple congregation is to start by preaching Christian identity, or to always be emphasizing Christian identity. And let me tell you a little bit about what I mean there. This seems simple, but I don't think it's many people's experience. If we can encourage folks to see themselves as followers of Jesus first and foremost, that their priority, their understanding of their own identity is first and foremost a follower of Christ, and that whatever political opinion or persuasion or passion that they have has to line up with that, we would be in a better spot. If you ask people, what's more important, your identity as a follower of Jesus or your identity as a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or whatever, what do you think most people would say? I would guess if the pastor asked them, they would say, follower of Jesus, right? But my wager is that functionally for a lot of these folks, they're spending more time cultivating their political identity than they are their spiritual identity. At least that's been my own experience. So what if we decided to try to talk about Christian identity like this in terms of our preaching? If we said, hey, our assumption is that our identity is first and foremost in our relationship with Christ, And we want to talk about the difference that Jesus makes in our everyday life. And from there, from that place of conversation, we also want to talk about the very important political issues that we're facing, and whether we come at that from a more liberal perspective or a more conservative perspective or an independent perspective, some other angle, we want to always be talking about these things together. So my fear is that sometimes we're actually starting with political identity and kind of shoehorning Christian identity into that political identity, rather than saying, well, first and foremost, we want to be shaped by our Christian identity. And then, yeah, it ought to line up with all kinds of different political persuasions, opinions, passions at different times. So, for example, I had a woman recently telling this story about how she felt like she had been a lifelong Democrat, disagreed on a couple of the platform, common Democratic platform opinions politically, and wasn't sure if she could still fit in the Democratic box because of those couple of differences. And if you get people into honest conversation about this, you realize these boxes are terrible, right? They're not fluid enough. They don't allow for enough diversity. And so if we instead started with, well, what difference does Jesus make in your life? And why do you think that should, what implications does that have for fill in the political topic that we want to discuss? My experience is if we can get people thinking in this direction, and if you're preaching this way, then you can make it, you can help align Christian identity with different political opinions that don't necessarily box people into these political identities that demand so much from them. So here's an example of kind of how that might work for you. So if you encourage people to see people as followers of Christ first, and you ask people what difference does Jesus make in their daily lives, and you start to preach about what I use the language of a distinctly Christian response to the challenges we're facing. That doesn't mean that there's only a Christian response, but I do think people are interested to know, like, how do we think Jesus would respond to fill in the political question? So a very concrete example is a series that we're actually doing right now at Mill City Church is called The Difference Jesus Makes. And I was working on a message from the book of Philemon recently. And in the book of Philemon, you have this really radical story where Paul is challenging a slave owner to not only forgive a slave who's run away, right? But to actually change the social status of Onesimus and to treat him as an equal and no longer a slave. Okay. And interestingly, some of the scholars I read said that this is one of the, I think it's the only letter that Paul doesn't distinctly mention the resurrection of Jesus. And so when I went at this text the other week, I just thought, okay, so the difference Jesus makes in this story is that Paul is not just telling this person, hey, don't punish this slave that you owned in the normal way, forgive him and bring him back. Not only that, but change his social status because of your Christian faith, because of the way that Jesus has created us all equally at the foot of the cross. So I want you to treat this person as your equal. Okay, well that has some pretty significant political implications for some of the questions we're wrestling with now, right? And it's a distinctly Christian response to how do we treat people with equality, even if the social status that we're in or the social classes that we're used to don't suggest that we need to treat them equally. And then you can apply that. And you can apply it broadly, you can apply it specifically, but you've started with a theological thrust of saying, because of what Jesus does, Paul gives this sort of advice at this time, which often could translate to, us thinking about our own situation in particular ways. So you kind of see this pattern here where instead of just saying, we all ought to have these political opinions about the problem of race in America, for example, and kind of backing into, and I also think Christianity supports this idea. Instead, start with Christian identity and say, yeah, what difference does Jesus make in the racial injustice conversations that we're having in the United States right now? And make sure they don't sound just like political identity platform opinions, but actual theological assertions based on who Jesus is and what Jesus is leading us to do. So the first suggestion here is to prioritize Christian identity and to preach from Christian identity to whatever political issues might arise. Second suggestion is to emphasize participation over opinion, okay? Participation in what God is doing over forming the right opinions. So one of the challenges we have, and one of the reasons we have such division in my view of it, is that people tend to go to church or go to worship in order to reaffirm and reassert whatever they already think is right. So they're listening for the pastor to kind of confirm whatever their opinion already is. And if instead of saying, well, if you leave Sunday worship or you leave listening to the sermon and the primary goal is for your opinion to be affirmed, or even for your opinion to be challenged, then the result of preaching is always stuck in our heads. And some of you come from very cerebral traditions where people think a ton about stuff, but they don't always translate that to their heart actions or to their everyday life. And so when I say participation over opinion, I mean, we need to preach in ways that ask this kind of question. How is God inviting us to participate actively in what God is already doing? And another set of questions in this direction are, you know, what is God up to in your everyday life? And how can we join in on that? And why I think this is such a radical shift is that if every sermon were a call of some kind to recognize the Spirit of God's action in everyday life, and some kind of challenge or encouragement to say God may be inviting you to love your, you know, particular neighbor in a certain way, are you going to step into that invitation this week or not? That would be a very different takeaway from, do you have the right intellectual opinion about whatever political topic is popular at the moment? And does it line up with the church's tradition? And does it line up with the pastor's opinion? And does it line up with your other people in your church's opinion? There's just way too much focus on opinion. And there's really no way to create a lot of unity over people's diverse opinions. The better question is, what does God actually want us to do together? And how are we going to go do that? And those actions can actually develop a lot more learning and a lot more humility than just continually reinforcing opinions or challenging opinions, even in worship spaces where people are mostly comfortable and don't require a lot of risk taking from them on their part. So the second suggestion here is to emphasize people's participation in God's mission over whatever opinions they might be forming about political topics. And then finally, I think sharing stories of learning experiences about political issues is a helpful way to help create more space for people to actually learn themselves rather than to feel immediately defensive of whatever perspective they already hold. So the example I want to give you is a series we've done a few times where we titled the sermon discussion of the text that we were engaged on, how I learned about race. And this particular approach was really powerful. We had four different speakers in four different weeks. And we asked the speakers to start their sermons by telling a story about how they, when they first became aware of racial identity and racial maybe injustices. And what this approach does is it, instead of the sermon sounding like, here's what you ought to think about racial injustice, for an example, it humanizes the speakers in a way that says everybody learned about this at some point, right, in their life. Some of them very late in life, some of them early in life. Some of those experiences were very profound, others were more mundane. But everybody learned about it at some point. And so what does that journey look like? And how does that connect with our Christian faith and what the biblical text is trying to say to us? And so learning experience as kind of a text, if you will, to go alongside the biblical text. In the age of authenticity, when there's so much credibility given to honest, authentic stories being shared about what someone's learned, if you or others who are preaching can share authentically about your own journey in growing in your understanding of whatever the topic might be, I'm just using race as one example, it opens up the space for other people to say, well, I also have a story. And very recently in a kind of classroom structure in our church where we had a 4-week conversation just about whiteness for white people. So like, let's just talk about what whiteness is and how it impacts the world. I mean, this gentleman who served in the Vietnam War, and he's a strong conservative person and posts a ton on Facebook about conservative views. And he shares this incredibly vulnerable story about how the first time he really recognized race as a construct, as a thing, was when he got to Vietnam and all the African-American soldiers spent all their social time together, and all the white soldiers spent all their social time together in the barracks when they weren't out in the field. And then they were all mixed when they would go out to serve together or they were on a mission. And then as soon as they came back, they would separate. And he said, I grew up in a small town, but this was totally, it was like, shocking to me that I could see this kind of division among these people that I was literally risking my life with. And wow, you could have heard a pin drop among the 20 some people when this guy was telling the story, because they all know his reputation. This is, you know, he's just someone in our church that identifies very overtly as a Republican, as a conservative. But that was a very different story. And it came out because we set up an environment where it was okay for everyone to say, yeah, this is kind of how I've learned about this. And it just humanizes in a different way. If we don't do that, we just end up with all these environments where everyone's just kind of defending their own view, right? And kind of getting at each other all the time. So how do we say, if Jesus died for all of us and we all have ways we need to grow and things we need to be forgiven for, how do we talk about our experiences in ways that maybe create a different kind of space? So here's my 3 points. And my bent here is to kind of go short and give you guys some chance to talk about this together in small groups. And then we'll have a large group discussion too, rather than talk at you for the whole hour. But kind of 3 main pieces here, right? Focus on Christian identity in your preaching and make sure whatever political discussions we have is anchored in following Jesus as an identity. Secondly, emphasize participation in God's mission over forming the right opinions and really ask action-oriented questions. What is it that God wants us to do? Are we willing to step into those things? How are we going to do that? And then finally, sharing stories of learning experiences around these political topics as a way to address these controversial topics, rather than feeling like you've got to give the definitive sermon on racial injustice every time that's called for, which I know the pressure that we all feel when some of those things feel like that's what's needed. So what I'd like to do, I think, is put you all in some groups. Well, welcome back, everybody. Hopefully you got into a couple good conversations. Would love to hear just from any group, if anybody would like to represent their group. Here's a question we talked about that seemed important to us, or a learning that we're taking away from our conversation.
I'll talk real quick. Our group talked about how much we internalize tension in our congregations, and that makes us anxious to preach. And so we self-muzzle ourselves because we feel the tension, the real physical, like actual bodily tension in our congregation, and how difficult that is to get over that hurdle.
Wow, that's a really good point. It affects us tremendously. Yeah, several people in our group said, you know, I feel this all the time. Yeah, good point. Other questions or learnings that you were taking away from your discussion? Feel free to stick them in the chat too, if you're more comfortable with that.
My name is Lee, and we talked about how COVID-19 is impacting our ability to process the sermon with people.
Yeah.
And they're not meeting in, you know, in their regular meetings, you know, the small groups that they meet, whether they're organized by the church or whether it's their own regular Wednesday morning coffee group down at the Stripes store or whatever. They're not able to process the sermon, and that means that we aren't able to process it with them either. And online processing is, it's low on the totem pole for the ability to work through conversations with people. Hmm.
Great point. Yeah. Finding spaces to process things is very hard in COVID. No question. Thomas, do you want to say any more about being political without supporting a party?
Yeah, I just really like that comment. It wasn't made by me. I'm sharing it from another one of our members, but their pastor had made a comment that we are definitely political, but we don't. But God doesn't support a particular party. So I like that comment. That was nice.
Good point here by Julie. We shared that often congregants know where we stand as pastors, and our ability to critique our own side, so to speak, gives us integrity if we have to critique the other side. So being honest about our own views and then the critiques of our own views helps create a space where everybody can critique all the things. That's great. Good advice. In our group, we talked a little bit about the need to figure out a way to help a congregation talk about the ways it talks to each other. So kind of fly up from any particular political issue for a second and just say things like, when we have conflicts over anything, but particularly over political pieces, how do we want to resolve those things? And maybe there's a series of sermons that just talks about healthy conflict resolution, honoring differences in other people, and even some practices where you get together with people who you know don't think like you do and try to listen, you know. I've heard many stories where pastors took a risk in a sermon, you know, where you've had that moment where you're like, I just have to say this, even if everyone's going to be pissed off at me, I'm going to say it. And then you say it, and exactly what you were afraid of happening happens. And like certain people think you're the most heroic preacher they've ever heard, and other people never want to come back to church again, right? And while I'm sure there are moments that we need to take those kinds of risks, I think one thing that moment highlights is that congregations don't have enough capacity to hold the tension of differing opinions well. So their only default is to either cheer or run away. And so how do we think over time, how do we help a congregation build up its capacity to hear things they don't agree with, even from a pastor in a sermon, and not freak out or cheer, but actually engage and realize even as they're hearing it that there's other people sitting next to them who may think that's wrong or that's right or what, like, how do we just put those building blocks into the congregation's life so that they have more capacity?
A really helpful building block around conflict resolution is using the Beatitudes as each Beatitude as a step building up. So you actually start with your own impoverishment in spirit, your own failure. You then look at those who are mourning and grieving what's happening at the moment, and you progressively move through them. It's a tool you can work with your congregation, and you get to peacemaking. You finally get to peacemaking, and then the one after is, but you still might fail, and then blessed are those who are persecuted. But they actually form really helpful steps.
Thank you. Some other suggestions in the chat: Peter Block's book on community and creating belonging. That's a great book. Christian resilience as a term for what I just described. Several different resources in the chat there if you're interested. Other questions or learnings that have come up over the last 50 minutes?
Well, we talked about, there were a couple of us that are in interim positions or where there's been recent pastoral change. And just the dynamic of a pandemic on top of that disruption. I don't know who said it, some systems theorists talked about how institutions contain anxiety and or hold anxiety. And so when there's disruption in the institution, there's like, you know, it's Pandora's box. There's just the anxieties everywhere. And so in this particular, politics are always kind of dicey, but, or can be, but then in this particular election season, that on top of pandemic or pandemic on top of a contentious election is just fraught.
Well, and with the pandemic also having a political, being politicized too.
Mm-hmm. Right. The pandemic itself is politicized, is what Tammy's saying, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mask, no mask, in person, not in person. Yeah. Yeah. Has anyone else found that just describing all those things, like Megan just did a really good job saying, this is what's going on. We have anxiety in our, like, just sort of giving language to what's happening in the congregation maybe lowers the temperature just a little bit. People are just like, hey, we're in the middle of a pandemic and a incredibly politically divisive period and a racial crisis. And, you know, that's just, this is Sunday. This is just where we are. Has anyone found that to be cathartic, at least? I don't know.
No.
I found it helpful, but I also realized that within a stone throw of our church, there's 15 very, very conservative churches who never stopped meeting in person. And so even saying anything about it brings up a lot of tension relationally, because like all of their friends have gotten to go to church. and so we've had several families leave because other churches were open. And so the pressure just even to name it actually increases temperature. So I guess you have to weigh what your congregation is.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we had a saint of the church died in April, and her family really wanted to have an in-person memorial, and they almost went to another church that would allow an in-person gathering, and they ultimately decided not to. But and then that affects the relationship with the family, but then it also affects the church because people want to, you know, she was a member of the community. She was taught their kids for years and years and years, and they want to participate in that memorial too. And so it was, yeah.
It does seem like what people are thinking they want is for preachers and leaders to resolve tension they feel. Mm-hmm. Whether that's about meeting in person or who to vote for or whatever. And one of the ways to resolve tension is just to say, here's how it is. This is the right perspective or the right practice. And then for anybody who agrees with you, they're going to be very pleased. And the people who, but then it completely ostracizes the people who think differently than that.
Right.
So the real difficult call of preaching to a diverse congregation in this way is that we're always holding tension. And Elizabeth was just describing how we're actually physically holding that tension. You know, we're holding the tension. I try to just say that out loud as many times as it seems tolerable. Like, this is a church that holds tension between a number of different realities. And there are other churches who don't hold that tension, don't want to hold that tension. And if you don't want to hold tension with us, then maybe this isn't a good fit. Rather than always trying to meet the expectations of people who are constantly waiting for you to resolve the tension. And that seems to help. It's kind of like setting those expectations for folks to say, being part of this church is living in this middle, because we don't want to let any of these folks go. It's hard for 25 minutes to get up and give a sermon that divides everyone because everybody feels the tension. But then after that, there's no tension because everyone left. And the only people that are left are the folks who all agree with each other. So it's terrible for 25 minutes. And then, people sometimes seem to think like, oh, you're just afraid to say we should meet in person or we shouldn't, you know. It's like, no, actually that's the easy way out. I'd only have to do that one Sunday. And then it's much, much harder to constantly be inquiring of God and trying to lead in a way that includes people and creates space for diversity. Russ?
Can you speak to the sense in which the catastrophization of the present is probably not, that there's also been catastrophization through the history of Scripture? And if we're called to be preachers, how can you say it has been like this before? I don't know if there's a good question in it. That's just kind of like this, it's as bad as it's ever been, and yet, wait, no. I mean, God's faithfulness through itself. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, think just, we sometimes say translating history or translating tradition is a good way to come at that and say, hey, in 1918, we had a flu and it was terrible and it killed a lot of people. And here's how the church responded. And here's what we can learn from how the church responded. I think you're right on. Like having a space where we can just say this isn't the first time and it won't be the last time, and how do we suffer well in the midst of hard circumstances is the Christian response to terrible circumstances. So I think leaning on history is really bright.